Meeting today is April 17, 2012. I'd like everybody to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, and I'd ask for you to remain standing for a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like a moment of silence to honor Stanislaus County Deputy Sheriff Robert Harris and civilian Glendon Eggert, who both lost their lives in the line of duty this past week. Thank you. We're going to start tonight's meeting presentation, April 2012, as Child Abuse Prevention Month and Child Abuse Prevention Council Art Contest winners.
Good evening, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Ms. Nino, Mr. Doring. My name is Jan Biff. I'm an assistant director with the Community Services Agency, Child and Family Services Division, and also have the privilege of serving as co-chair for the Child Abuse Prevention Council.
Good evening, Chairman O'Brien and the board. My name is Jeff Anderson. I am the clinical director of Sierra Vista Child and Family Services, and along with Jan, have the privilege of serving as co-chair of the Stanislaus County Child Abuse Prevention Council. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and we are here this evening to share some of the activities that are occurring in our community, as well as present the winners of the 9th Annual Through the Eyes of the Child Art Contest. Some important facts. Nationwide, during the fiscal year of 2010-2011, there were an estimated 1,537 child fatality victims. Of these fatalities, 79.4% of the children were younger than 4 years old. From July 1, 2010 through June 30, 2011, there were 9,403 children with at least one referral in Stanislaus County. The mission of the Child Abuse Prevention Council is to actively develop, support, and coordinate community efforts and awareness to prevent child abuse and heal its effects. The council was established in 2002. Members are appointed by the Board of Supervisors.
We'd like to share some of the activities of the council. The Children's Trust Fund is a fund for abuse prevention and intervention programs in our community. The funding source is received through birth certificates and the California Kids Plate, which is that handprint on the back of license plates. It is the responsibility of the Stanislaus Child Abuse Prevention Council to designate the spending priorities for the trust fund. Recognizing the loss of almost $5.9 million in child welfare funding in fiscal year 2010-2011, the council decided to develop a 5-year plan designating $200,000 annually to serve as local match. This was able to fund the following prevention and intervention programs. First, differential response services for children 0 through 17. When the referral comes in through the child abuse hotline, it is either assigned for investigation or it is evaluated out because it doesn't meet the criteria for us to make a response. Differential response utilizes community workers from family resource centers to respond to those referrals that otherwise would have been evaluated out. This is a prevention program that helps families to get the kind of help that they need before it rises to the need for CPS to become involved. We also fund Clean and Sober Living that's specifically for men and their children here in the community. And then in addition, the council approved $94,000 a year for the Center for Human Services, Hutton House, to provide temporary shelter, case management, crisis intervention, support services, and counseling for youth and their families. In November of 2007, the council initiated a shaken baby prevention program after we heard about 6 cases of diagnosed shaken baby. Shaken baby is a term that's used to describe the signs and symptoms resulting from the violent shaking of an infant or child. We receive a grant from the Stanislaus County Children and Families Commission to provide a community-wide prevention and awareness program. The major component is specific training provided to new parents at all hospitals in the county. So far, 29,235 parents have been educated on shaken baby syndrome in a hospital setting since the program began in November of 2007. Training and educational materials are also offered through our local domestic violence prevention and intervention programs, the foster parent training program, and at family resource centers. This month, you may have also noticed our prevention campaign, Never Shake a Baby, If You Shake Me, You Could Kill Me, that is on the sides of the school of the city buses in Modesto. During fiscal year 2010-2011, we did have two diagnosed shaken baby syndrome cases. Even one is too many, but we're happy that we're able to have this prevention program in place. And lastly, the Children's Memorial Flag is a national public awareness campaign to draw attention to the tragedy of child abuse. And next week, many county departments and community partners will be flying that flag.
Another prevention activity is through the Eyes of the Child Art Contest. Children and youth from grade kindergarten through 12 are encouraged to submit art that depicts their interpretation of child abuse. As you will see, these children and youth really understand the tragedy of abuse and the lasting impact it has on children and their families. So now we'd like to present the winning art. And children, when we call your names, we'd like you to come up front and stand up in this sort of half circle. We'll call you one by one, and we'll call you by grade classification. If you could hold your applause until we get to the actual winning art for that age group, we'd really appreciate it. So here we go. Honorable mention, Mario from Bonita Elementary. Is Mario here? Jaden from Bonita Elementary. Kaylin from Bonita Elementary. Nathan from Hunt. Cadence from Hunt. All right. I think we're going to have your picture taken real quick.
Look at the camera.
There we go.
Okay, good job, you guys. Thank you. Okay, here's a winning art for 4th through 6th grade. Honorable mention, Julissa. Honorable mention, Abigail. And 3rd place, Shelby. And 2nd place, Brenda. Okay, Brenda's not here. And 1st place is Victoria from Bakker Elementary. Very good. Thank you.
And now for middle school. Honorable mention, Kurahima. Okay. Honorable mention, Mercedes from Savage. Our 3rd place winner for Mark Twain, Michelle. our second place winner, Monica. And from Turlock Junior High, Javi Batu. All right, thank you.
Okay, here's the winning art from 9th through 12th grade. Honorable mention, Monica from Pittman High. Honorable mention, Grace from Oakdale High. Third place is Sandra from Central Valley High. And second place, Brittany from Beyer High School. And first place, Angelica, Central Valley High. Okay, thank you.
And now we're very pleased to present our grand prize winner, for this 2011 art contest. Janina from Savage Middle School. Was able to see the images that were projected of the artwork. It's pretty incredible, the intensity and emotion that these children capture in this artwork. This artwork will be used to create the Through the Eyes of a Child calendar for 2013. This calendar is a powerful tool describing various resources available in our community to prevent and treat child abuse. The artwork will be on display at 1010 10th Street to commemorate Child Abuse Awareness Month. The display will be moved to various locations throughout San Jose County during 2012. Previous grand prize art is on display at the San Jose County Main Library. This permanent display promotes child abuse awareness in our community. We'd just like to say thank you to all the artists for taking the time to create such wonderful depictions of a very terrible and tragic event. We want to thank the teachers that are involved that provided encouragement and the parents that provided time and encouragement for bringing your children here. Thank you, Board of Supervisors, for your support, for allowing us to present these wonderful kids' artwork to you. After we are done with the proclamation, which will be in just a moment, we'll ask that the families and children get up and exit through this door and then to our left for a reception where the winners will receive their award packages. So now council members Ken Fitzgerald from San Jose County Office of Education and Joseph Mesa of Modesto City Schools will receive the proclamation declaring April Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Before we get to the... Before we get to the resolutions, I want to thank all of our artists who participated this year and to pass along the thanks to all of your teachers who were part of it as well, and as well as all the family members that came out and supported all of our artists. So I want to thank each and every one of you who came out tonight. I have a couple resolutions. I'm going to hand off one here first, and here's just a second here. This is a resolution of the Board of Supervisors. Whereas statistics of children who are abused and neglected escalate each year, child abuse prevention is a community problem, and finding solutions depends on involvement among people throughout the community. The effects of child abuse are felt by whole communities and need to be addressed by the entire community. Effective child abuse prevention programs succeed because of partnerships created among the community service agency, schools, religious organization, law enforcement agencies, and the business community. Youth-oriented prevention programs offer positive alternatives for young people and encourage youth to develop strong ties to their communities. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors of the County of Stanislaus does hereby proclaim April 2012 as Stanislaus County Child Abuse Prevention Month. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much and present these resolutions to you and ask you if you have a few words to say.
I too want to reflect the thanks and gratitude that we have for all the parents and the students who participate in this contest. The calendar has some great information, but it wouldn't be successful without your support and all of your great artwork. This type of support community-wide is fantastic, and it's really, to be honest, it's my favorite part of being on the Child Abuse Prevention Council, so thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you to the students again for doing such a great job with the artwork and also for your sense of community service. It is obvious that you all have a gift and you have put it to a very good use, and we appreciate that.
Okay, as they exit out, next thing on our agenda today is public comment period. Although I have two specific requests to speak, it's on an agenda item, so I'll get those to when we get those to that agenda item. Is there anybody else wishing to address this board on any item that is not on tonight's agenda? All right. Seeing none, I'll move the consent calendar and ask Board of Supervisors if there's any item that they'd wish to pull for a separate vote, separate discussion, or anything along the lines of that.
Let's pull A4.
A4, very good.
And I think I'm just going to have a couple quick questions on B6 and 7.
Okay, A4, B6, and 7. Can I have a motion to address the remainder of the consent calendar?
So moved.
Motion by Chiesa.
I'll second that.
Second by Withrow. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And I needed to ask if there's any public comment on any of those consent items. Seeing none, the vote count will stand. And I'll move to item A4, Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the Sons of Italy is going to be naming the Franceschi family as the business of the year this year. They own Baldwin Trucking. I just wanted to make that comment. This award is going to be given out this Friday. Each year, the Sons of Italy pick an Italian family whose contributions to the county is recognized. And I just wanted to make that comment.
Okay. Would you like to make the motion on that?
I would. As a good Irishman, I'd like to make a motion and accept A4.
Okay. I'd like to second that.
Any comment from the audience on agenda item A4? Motion by Chiesa, second by DeMartini. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Move to item B6.
Yeah, I just have Sonia. I'm sorry. Just a couple quick questions on this one.
Item B6 is approval to use public facility fees for the demolition and removal of a former parks concession facility at Woodward Reservoir.
This is just a real simple question. How big is this building? How come $20,000 to just tear the thing down?
The building's about, I would estimate, about 1,400 square feet, and it's actually, there are three structures, and they're all kind of tied together haphazardly by a fence, and
that's what that's, it costs.
Well, that we're in the process of getting the bids, and so once we get the bids in, we anticipate that it will be under the $20,000.
Okay, that was just a small one. Thank you. This is just the chief accountant driving me crazy here. I'm sorry. So then on B7, when we talked about the equipment here,
yes.
I mean, some big dollar items here. Do we have to get, do we have to have these things? Can we buy used equipment, or could we hire somebody to do this and not have to have this equipment sitting out there after, I mean, this is $368,000 for one of these things, and
correct.
Are we going to use that daily, or, sorry.
Yeah, the D8 dozer that we have, currently we've got about 20 miles of roads out at Woodward Reservoir that need to be maintained. We have had other pieces of equipment that have been taken out of service, but in order for us to maintain our trails up at Frank Rains, the off-road vehicle park, the issue we have is if we get a big rainstorm in there and we need to cut something out to keep the slide or the material from sliding down into the creek, getting a cat up there the next day so that we can mitigate that, so that we can abide by our environmental documents that we have to, in our trail maintenance. It's just difficult for us. We have in the past been leasing equipment to use up there, but we find that, getting it in there, getting it out of there, if there's an emergency, then, getting something up there within, like the next day, it becomes very difficult for us. Between Frank Rains, the LaGrange Off-Road Vehicle Park, Modesto Reservoir, and Woodward Reservoir, we feel that, we would probably get 1,000 or so hours of use out of a D8 on an annual basis, just to maintain our roads and our campsites, and our trails at our off-road vehicle parks.
And what's it costing us right now for that 1,000 hours to lease?
Well, we're not doing all of the maintenance that we need to do right now. And a lot of times what we do is we use a smaller piece of equipment with maybe a box scraper, and we try to move material, and it ends up taking us a lot longer to do the same amount of job with a smaller piece of, with a smaller piece of equipment, with a box scraper or a front end loader. And so by having a larger piece of equipment, we'll be able to spend less time actually doing it. I mean, actually doing the maintenance that's necessary.
Yeah, okay. I wish we had a dollar amount.
It costs us about $4,000 a month to rent a dozer, and that does not include the operator. We have a volunteer operator that, an old retired equipment driver that does a lot of our maintenance up at Frank Rains Park, and then we have several other staff who are experienced large equipment operators.
So $4,000 a month, but we don't do it every month. It's just whenever we're doing it.
Yeah. For example, up at LaGrange, we probably only maintain, we're lucky if we get up there once a month. Ideally, we should, especially the motorcycle track, it would be ideal for us to get out there two days a week, especially after. We have certain seasons, like off-road vehicle parks primarily go from October through April, and those are also the wet months. And so to do that sort of trail maintenance, that's where the equipment would be primarily during those months. And then in the late spring, after the off-road goes away, then that's when we do our bigger maintenance jobs out at the reservoirs prior to the beginning of our high season.
So all the rest of these things but for some of these big pieces of equipment, I just wish I could see a cost benefit and say, okay, it's going to take us this long to pay for this, but we will recover this cost through the savings that we're going to have by not having to lease one, or not just something like that would justify that, rather than just
a dollar amount here. And I know I didn't give any time to prepare for this. I'm sorry. So there's no way you're going to have that for me now. And I don't know if there's anything we can do about it at this point. But
just one thought, Supervisor Withrow. What we could do is that we could get board action on the rest of the items and exclude some of those higher dollar amount items and list that as an exception, and then we could return to the board with a cost benefit to justify those higher ticketed items if the board would like to consider that.
That'd be great. And again, Sonia, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I apologize for doing this at such short notice, but that'd be great for me.
Supervisor Monteith?
Also, I would assume that those would go on a bid, and these are estimations rather than hard facts.
That,
so all of this would go out to bid, so most likely these numbers are just a guide.
There are.
And there could be some used equipment if it's good used equipment. This is merely a guide to go by, and I'm sure every time everyone comes in with a budget, they try to come up a little higher to cover themselves.
Okay. Supervisor Kiesa?
Are we allowed to, with the air quality, like for this dozer, could we buy a used one?
I would not purchase one that does not meet the current air quality standards, or that we would have to retrofit prior to 2014 or 2016. The availability of used equipment that, because we have to comply, all of our equipment has to comply with the air quality standards for off-road diesel emissions. And so it would not be beneficial to us to purchase something that didn't meet the current standards.
I guess my point, do we have a Caterpillar now?
We have a D3 right now that we use.
Okay.
Yeah, which is much smaller than the D6, and it's primarily used the majority of the time at the Frank Rains, but it's really not ideal because of its size and the steepness of the hills up there and the kind of water breaks that we have to cut and the fire breaks that we have to cut. We really need something that's a little bit bigger than a D3.
Do you know the age of that? Could we trade for air quality money? Could we take one out of service and purchase in lieu of running quite a few programs here?
Yeah, we looked at, in fact, we had an agenda item that we brought to the board several weeks ago where we were looking at the dozers that we had both at the landfill and some of our equipment that we have for the parks and rec. Most of it, the older stuff that we have, we're able to keep it under the 100 hours so that it's exempt. Then those pieces of equipment that we felt that we could retrofit to meet the next tier up, or we applied for some grant funding to do that. When we did that, we found out that the rules were kind of changed on us. And what their board said that they would pay for the retrofits and ends up being significantly less than we had anticipated that we were doing. So we're having to modify our grant application as we speak. We're still trying to get, they're still tweaking some of the rules related to that. And so, we'll be back with that also.
All right, then I'm going to make the quick suggestion, because I agree with Supervisor Withrow. Let's go ahead with this action item minus the one. We'll have the discussion again and see if there's any options, because there might not be an option, but I think we should have that discussion to see if there's an opportunity there. So with that, if you would like someone to make a motion on B6, B7, and B7 minus the $368,000 for the B6.
Does that suffice, Supervisor Withrow?
Yeah, that's great. I'll make that motion. We do that and pulling that one out.
Motion by Kiesa, second by Withrow, I think is what that was for item 6, B7, less that one specific item. Any public comment on items B6 or B7? Any future further comments from Board of Supervisors?
It'd just be nice if we have all the figures that she has. Do you think we could get those? There's none of them are in the handout, so. You don't have any numbers out here. No, thank you.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thanks, Sonia. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, we'll go to the scheduled matter, item 635, approval to close 30-day public comment period and conduct a public hearing.
Good evening, Chair O'Brien, members of the board, Ms. Menino and Mr. Doring, Angela Freitas, interim planning director. We are here this evening to request the board's approval to close the 30-day public comment period and conduct a public hearing to consider approval of a package of documents necessary for the ongoing federal funding of the Stanislaus Urban County Community Development Block Grant Program. Those documents include the fiscal year 12-15 consolidated plan, the fiscal year 12-13 annual action plan, a revitalization strategy areas for airport and park lawn neighborhoods, an analysis of impediments, and a substantial amendment to the fiscal year 11-12 annual action plan. We did receive one item of correspondence that was too late to include with the agenda item, but has been provided to you, and that was dated April 16, 2012, from the California Rural Legal Assistance regarding the item. With me this evening is Aaron Farnan, the Planning Department's Community Development Manager, to present to you an overview of the documents being proposed for approval.
Thank you, Angela. Good evening, Chairman O'Brien and Supervisors. This evening, we'll be presenting five plans and a general overview, with the consolidated plan being the governing document for the next three fiscal years. These activities will begin on July 1st and conclude on June 30th, 2015. With the exception of Riverbank, all non-entitlement communities are partnering with us now. We have Ceres, Houston, Newman, Oakdale, Patterson, and Waterford. These plans, if approved by the board and Housing and Urban Development, will allow us to use these funds for eligible activities under community development block grants and emergency solution grants. These funds must meet one of three of these grant objectives. It has to serve the moderate to low-income population. If it's a housing activity, it has to prevent or eliminate slum or blight conditions. These funds cannot be used to supplant other state, federal, or local dollars. One of the initiatives is the moderate income population. Example here is for a family of four, it's $62,000. So if the population that we're serving is below that, that's an example of an eligible income cap. The plans that we'll be covering today, a quick overview, is the consolidated plan, that's the governing document, and then there's the annual action plan. We are doing a three-year consolidated plan to fall in line with both of our entitlement partners, the City of Turlock and Modesto. We also have done a substantial amendment to allow us to use emergency solution grant funds. We are required every 3 years to do an analysis for impediments to fair housing choice, and we also have neighborhood revitalization strategy plans today. Beginning back in November, we engaged the community develop these overarching plans, and they allow and guide us for the next 3 years. Beginning back in November, we started with public meetings. We then began developing a plan in December through February. We presented a draft plan and allowed a 30-day public review period that would conclude this evening. With public comment and a community-wide survey, we were told that there's four main objectives in their eligible activities. The focus was infrastructure, economic development, housing programs utilizing home funds, which the City of Turlock is the lead for, and public services. Our overall estimated contribution from Housing and Urban Development, if the plan is approved, is approximately $1.9 million of CDBG funds and just under $200,000 for emergency solution funds. Our first annual action plan, which will cover July 1st of 2012 through June 30th, 2012, includes a budgetary breakdown of funds within eligible activities. These categories are including infrastructure, public services, fair housing, economic development, and revitalization strategies for the park lawn and airport neighborhoods. The annual action plan is the second document we'll discuss today. One of the high needs was infrastructure. This year we're setting aside $362,000 approximately as well as we had designated the last 2 years approximately $1.2 million for the last two annual action plans that we will be able to utilize for either Parkhorn or airport neighborhoods for a phased infrastructure project for the sewer installation. In June, we hope to have finished the planning phase, and we'll be able to come back and let you know in August what the phases are probably going to be. Approximately $200,000 is available for emergency solution grants funds. These include activities that focus on using the funds for homeless prevention and rapid rehousing, as well as assisting for homeless facilities. We went through a competitive process, and we do this annually. This competitive process provided recommendations for the following nonprofits: Children's Crisis Center, Community Housing and Shelter Services, Family Promise of Greater Modesto, and the Salvation Army, as well as the We Care program. We also are allowed to set aside approximately 10% of our funds annually for public services. And these activities include public services relating to senior services, child care, education, public safety, homeless food service programs, and many others. This year we're recommending American Red Cross for funding, Center for Human Services, Children's Crisis Center, Habitat for Humanity, Healthy Aging, Howard Training Center, the Salvation Army, Second Harvest Food Bank, United Samaritans Foundation, and Westside Food Pantry. The next plan that I'll provide a quick overview on is the Neighborhood Revitalization Strategy Plan. This plan began with engaging local communities, and it became clear through our surveys that both the airport and Parkland neighborhoods were a priority. Part of the plan will include engaging a local nonprofit through a competitive process to coordinate capacity within the established neighborhoods. We will hopefully partner with groups such as the Airport Neighbors United and Park Lawn Neighbors United. Ultimately, the nonprofit or the community group will attain nonprofit status, allowing them to use these funds. If they don't attain the status, HUD may not authorize us to use those funds within those communities. So that's going to be our goal for the first year. Every 3 years, we're required to do analysis for impediments to fair housing choice. This cycle, we contracted through a competitive process, Project Sentinel. They found that there was two impediments to fair housing: a shortage of affordable housing, particularly for larger families, and a lack of comprehensive fair housing and housing counseling education services. We've contracted with Project Sentinel this year to provide those services, and that need's pretty much been addressed with that. The federal government requires we set aside funding for that activity as well. To conclude this presentation, we have the following five staff recommendations for your consideration this evening. The first one is to close a 30-day public comment period to consider approval of the fiscal year 2012 through 2015 consolidated plan, the fiscal year 2012 through 2013 annual action plan, the housing and urban development neighborhood revitalization strategy areas for airport and park lawn neighborhoods, that's a mouthful, the fiscal year 2012 through 2015 analysis for impediments to fair housing choice, and the substantial amendment to the fiscal year 2011 through 2012 action plan. The second recommendation is to conduct a public hearing this evening, April 17th at 6:35 p.m., to consider approval of the fiscal year consolidated plans through 2012 through 2015, the fiscal year annual action plan 2012 through 2015, the neighborhood revitalization strategies for the airport and park lawn areas, analysis impediments for fair housing choice, and the substantial amendment to the fiscal year 2011-12 annual action plan. The third recommendation is to authorize the Chief Executive Officer to sign the Community Development Block Grant, Emergency Solutions Grant, and the Home Investment Partnership Home Certifications. The fourth recommendation is to authorize the Chairman of the Board of Supervisors to sign the fiscal year 2012 through 2013 annual allocation agreements for each of the participating Stanislaus Urban County cities. And finally, to authorize the Director of Planning and Community Development to execute any related program agreements, contracts, or other documentation required for the implementation of the various federal funds, including CBG, ESG, Home Revitalization Strategy, HPRP, Homeless Prevention Rapid Housing, CDBGR, Recovery Act Funds, Neighborhood Stabilization Program Funds, CalHome, and Water Board Program Funds. This authorization includes the use of any program income in accordance with the applicable programs and guidelines. And we're available for any questions that you might have.
Any questions from the board?
I just had one. The an objective D, there was a letter we got from CRLA requesting Park Lawn United Neighbors be added to the group under Park Lawn Neighborhood Organizations. Is that possible to just add that tonight?
Yes, sir, we can do that. On page 9, we can add it under CRLA.
Okay, I would like to see that's added tonight.
Okay. Supervisor Whitman?
Just one quick one, Angela, Aaron. You know, on this table one, I'm the one who's asking the accounting questions here, but on this table one, you know, it talks about the allocation estimates for the CDBG and ESG allocation estimates. And I'm just curious, under county, why is our administration costs with regard to our activities like 50% of the total? Or am I missing there? I'm sure there's something.
With the entity, Bourbon County, we're liable for all monitoring. For all six cities, we monitor them quarterly. We have to report to HUD. They come every 2 years and do auditing for us. It includes lots of things regarding an audit. If you have federal dollars over $500,000, you have to do an audit. There's many things that we have to do, technical assistance for the cities as well. We tend to not utilize all of it, but we're able to set aside that amount. Whatever we do not use then gets rolled over into an eligible infrastructure activity.
Like in the last, I guess the last time we did this was, how much of that was not used? I wonder that we did roll over. I wonder where we even...
Generally, we tend to use approximately 10% of that. And so of the total that's eligible, and I think we had, how much do we have? About... I'm not quite sure. We had about less than 100 left, over 100,000.
Okay. So it's really split amongst seven, not really just this one, is what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Any other comments or questions? This is a public hearing. I do have a couple requests to speak. I'm going to open the public hearing and ask for Emily either Long or Lang to come forward. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Chairman and other members of the Board of Supervisors. My name is Emily Long. I am an attorney with CRLA. I work specifically on the Community Equity Initiative Project, which we seek to address and eliminate infrastructure and service disparities and deficiencies in disadvantaged low-income communities that are also unincorporated, like Park Lawn. We've been working in the Park Lawn neighborhood for approximately 3 years after being invited by community residents to host legal educational trainings to increase community political participation on the local, county, and state levels. And I have members of Park Lawn United Neighbors here with me tonight. Park Lawn United Neighbors, I just wanted to let you know a little bit about the group. And first of all, thank you so much for this plan that you've put forward. We're really excited about it, and Park Lawn United Neighbors is very excited about it. So the group meets twice monthly. They've elected a board of directors and is currently in the process of passing their bylaws. Two of the association's board directors currently serve on the South Modesto Municipal Advisory Council. Park Lawn United Neighbors has held two successful community gatherings in June and October of 2011. Last year to raise awareness around the neighborhood and the issues in the neighborhood. They've provided community toy giveaways, they've done tamale sales, they've really energized the Park Lawn community with their leadership. Park Lawn United Neighbors will continue to advocate with the county for completion of the entire Park Lawn sewer infrastructure project, and applauds the county for the project's inclusion in the annual action plan as well as the consolidated plan. And you've probably seen Park Lawn community members in the press lately. They were just featured in California Watch, as well as they were on the cover of the San Francisco Chronicle two Saturdays ago, talking about the needs of unincorporated communities in California. We believe that this is due to the strong public relations skills and press experience of members of Park Lawn United Neighbors. Thank you very much to Supervisor DeMartini for offering up our suggestion on adding Parkland United Neighbors as one of the public services groups. I don't need to talk about that. We're encouraged to see that the county's plan for investment has included a plan for the sewer within the NRSA. However, we would like to see a more concrete plan for development of this physical infrastructure. We were also pleased to see that there's a housing component to the NRSA. We completed a survey with Self-Help Enterprises, another nonprofit. Within the last year it was finished, and we found that the median household income for the neighborhood of Parkland is $18,999. 94.38% of Parkland residents qualify as low income. Over 75% are living below very low income, and 43% are living within the extremely low income threshold. So you're definitely meeting the criteria that is required of the AMI. Also, the vast majority of the homes in Parkland date back to the 1940s and 50s and have received limited upgrades just because of how I mentioned the poverty rates that people are living in Parkland. So we would encourage the county in any further revisions to NRSA or following implementation of it to make sure that any forms of loans that you offer to community residents would have some sort of subsidy to them and not just be long-term loans, just considering the income levels that we're dealing with here in Parkland. Parkland United Neighbors also encourages the county to think creatively when it comes to vacant lots and abandoned homes in Parkland. The community residents would greatly value the establishment of a third place, either a community garden or a community center, somewhere where people could come together safely with their families and enjoy socialization with each other. Thank you again very much for your commitment to Parkland and for including this plan. Thank you to planning staff. We look forward to working together with you all to implement this plan. And if you have any questions, I'm available.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jose Franco. Good evening.
Buenas noches. Mi nombre es Jose Franco y soy de los vecinos unidos de Parkland, y quisiera darles las gracias a principalmente a Mr. Martini y a todos ustedes que nos han ayudado, aunque sea un poco, con que necesitamos mucho para seguir adelante el proyecto que nosotros queremos hacer. Yo tengo 40 años, más de 40 años viviendo en ese neighborhood, y quisiera mirar que se pusiera los sewers y las banquetas antes de que me muera.
Hi, good evening, members of the board. My name is Anita Picard. I'm with the CW for CRLA. I will be interpreting for Mr. Franco today. Mr. Franco has been a resident of Parkland community for 4 years, and he first of all would like to thank the board so much for the establishment of this plan, and especially to DeMartini for her support for the Parkland United Neighbors Group as well as the Parkland residents. Ultimately, Mr. Franco is really, really interested in really pushing forward in the establishment and overall completion of the project, the sewer project in the area, as well as the establishment of sidewalks in the area, hopefully before he passes on.
También estamos trabajando, más bien los sheriffs están trabajando con nosotros, porque ahorita hay mucho crimen en ese neighborhood. Por la sencilla razón que se han movido pandillas a nuestro neighborhood y hay muchas casas abandonadas y también hay muchos lotes baldíos que todo es mal aspecto para la comunidad.
And currently we're working alongside the local sheriff, the community sheriffs, because currently in the Parkland area there's a great increase of crime, especially with the influx of gangs in the Parkland area. And there's just a lot of vandalism as well as vacant homes that really are not really pleasing to the eye.
Y aprovechando también que ahora en este mes es el mes del niño, también he mirado yo y miro todos los días que las pandillas reclutan muchas criaturas de 8 hasta 15 años de 8 para arriba de las edades reclutan para que sigan haciendo negocios que de pintar las paredes, de andar haciendo mal.
Mm-hmm.
Y es una lástima.
And also really greatly considering that this is the month of the child, one of the things that I'd like to also bring to light in our community is the fact that currently there is this recruitment of children 8 and up, 8 to 15, from these local gang members in our area to do, of course, the activities that the gangs do in our area. And so this is just very unfortunate in our community.
Y también queremos nosotros que si pudiéramos tener un jardín comunitario en nuestro neighborhood para tener más que hacer y llevar productos naturales a nuestras casas, si se puede.
And also, if it can be done, we would greatly like the establishment of the community garden to also bring unity into our neighborhood alongside families of our neighborhood and also have an opportunity to have fresh produce coming from this garden that is tended by the residents to our home. Of course, this is if it's a possibility.
Gracias por su tiempo.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Anybody else wishes to speak on this item tonight? Yeah, we do need you to state your name for the record.
Yeah. My name is Juan Perez. I'm a local advocate for the youth and for the community. One question I did have for the plan was if we are setting aside money for future projects, like maybe a community garden or possibly, I think they wanted to do a homeless shelter for a day center. Are we setting aside money for future projects?
Directly, this plan does not set aside those monies. It does set aside monies for public services, which might address those areas, but not actual facilities within the community.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak on this item tonight? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the board for any further questions or comments. I did have a question. When it comes to the housing programs, does this tie us to any specific program as far as who's going to run the program? Are our actions tonight tying us to any specific organization?
The programs that we envision are the programs that we already have in place, which are the Neighborhood Stabilization Program and the rehab programs that utilize home funds and also any redevelopment funds that may be carried forth to the successor housing agency.
Okay. Stanislaus County Housing Authority?
We do have contracts with the Stanislaus County Housing Authority for those programs, and those contracts are reimbursement contracts. We do check all the billings that we get from them to make sure that they are compliant with local and federal regulations.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, can we add this Park Lawn United Neighbors, even though this agenda item's been written?
I think if you make the motion, you can add that in there. Yes, sir.
Okay. Fine. We ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay. I would move that we approve staff recommendations with those changes, unless our attorney's got a better way of saying it.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Supervisor DeMartini, the motion would be to adopt 5 staff recommendations and to amend Section 2.4, Objective D, of the Neighborhood Revitalization Strategy Areas for fiscal years 2012-2017. Is it 2017 or 2015?
2015.
I'm sorry. To add Park Lawn United Neighbors to the list of existing nonprofit community groups currently providing services within the Park Lawn neighborhood.
Just to correct, it was 2017 on that one.
Was 2017?
That added the legal description to your motion.
Yes, that's what I meant to say, exactly.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
A motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move on to scheduled matter at 6:40 p.m. Public hearing to consider introduction, waivings of readings, and adoption of ordinance amendment application 2009-01, truck parking in the ag zone.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, before we proceed with this matter, upon advice of legal counsel, Supervisor Chiesa has decided to recuse himself from participation in this regarding this particular matter, in that he has a material, that this decision could have a material financial effect on his business, agricultural business interests, and therefore he is stepping down to avoid any conflict of interest.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Angela Freitas, Interim Planning Director. This next item before you is an ordinance amendment addressing the parking of tractor-trailer combinations in the A2 General Agricultural Zoning District. With me this evening to help present this item is Assistant Planner Javier Camarena. The proposed ordinance amendment originated in the spring of 2008 when, in response to code enforcement actions, a group of truck operators asked the county's Agricultural Advisory Board for assistance. At the time, there were roughly 20 non-compliant truck parking facilities that had been reported to the Code Enforcement Division. In December of 2008, an ad hoc committee was formed to examine the possibility of parking commercial vehicles in the A2 zoning district. The ad hoc committee identified two goals. One, to examine the possibility of allowing truck owner-operators to park commercial vehicles on property in the A2 zoning district, in particular smaller-sized parcels of 1 to 3 acres in size. And two, to provide tractor-trailer parking facilities, thus removing trucks from public roads and county right-of-ways. The ad hoc committee consists of two supervisors, Supervisor Monteith and Supervisor DeMartini, and is supported by staff in the Chief Executive's Office, Planning Department, Department of Environmental Resource, County Council, and the Ag Commissioner's Office. The different proposed ordinance versions have been presented to the General Plan Update Committee and the Agricultural Advisory Board, and various versions have been presented to the Planning Commission, both in February and April of 2010, and most recently in April of 2012, and previously to the Board of Supervisors in June of 2010. The different versions address modifications to clarify tractor-trailer combinations and truck size, and the ordinance amendment at one point was returned back to staff to consider limiting applications to highway corridors. The current version addresses the truck parking needs by providing both a use permit and a home occupation or the home occupation option. And at this time, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Javier, who will provide an overview of the current ordinance amendments recommended for approval by the Planning Commission.
Good evening, Javier Camarena with the Stanislaus County Planning Department. The proposed ordinance amendments would add the parking of tractor-trailer combinations to the A2 zoning ordinance as a use requiring a use permit. The proposed ordinance amendment would also add the parking of 3 tractor-trailer combinations to the home occupation section of the zoning ordinance. Combinations must have a minimum of 5 axles and be capable of hauling a combined gross vehicle weight of 80,000 pounds. The following slide is an example of some of the combinations we're discussing. You've got your tractor-trailer combination. We have your tractor and your trailer, truck-trailer combination, so that the trailer is attached to the truck along with another trailer, and the truck tanker trailer. These are commonly known as big rigs, semi-trucks, all capable of hauling up to 80,000 pounds. The following slide shows some examples of the different trailers that these tractors pull. You have your semi-trailers, which are a single trailer, fairly long, and your sets of doubles. You've got your flatbeds, your dump trailers, and your box trailers. The following slide shows vehicles that would not be permitted under this ordinance amendment: box trucks, flatbed trucks, tow trucks, utility trucks, any commercial vehicle that's unable to haul up to 80,000 pounds. So the use permit ordinance amendment has certain requirements. They include allowing up to 12 tractor-trailer combinations. Two trailers are allowed per tractor. At least one of the combinations must be registered to the property owner, and property owner shall live on the site. Tractor-trailers must be in full operable condition for at least 6 consecutive months of every year. No offloading is allowed on site, and limited maintenance is allowed. parcels are required to be at least 1 acre in size. Parking area will not exceed 1.5 acres or 50% of the parcel. Trucks must meet state and local weight restrictions. All driveways will be approved by Public Works. Offices are allowed, and a use permit is subject to environmental review. In addition to the mentioned requirements, each proposed facility will also have to meet the following use permit findings, which include the use not be detrimental to the health, safety, and general welfare of the surrounding area or the county. The establishment as proposed will not be substantially detrimental to or conflict with the agricultural use of other properties in the vicinity, and that the establishment as proposed will not create a concentration of commercial and industrial uses in the vicinity. The home occupation ordinance amendment is intended for smaller facilities. Currently, the home occupation ordinance allows one commercial vehicle. The ordinance amendment would raise that number to 3. Parcels will also, for the home occupation ordinance amendment, parcels will also be required to be at least 1 acre in size. Parking cannot exceed 1.5 acres or 50% of the parcel. All tractor-trailer combinations must be registered to an occupant of the dwelling on the parcel, and all trucks shall be operational. No offloading of trailers shall occur on site. Maintenance is limited. And for the home occupation ordinance, to receive a home occupation permit, it does not require environmental review or discretionary approval. So someone wanting to do a home occupation trucking operation would just need to come into the planning department and get a business license. Throughout the process, there have been a number of concerns raised by the different committees, boards, and planning commission. They include consistency with the general plan, establishing a precedence for opening up the A2 zone to non-agricultural uses. One issue brought up was that it may be viewed as an unfair business practice, general enforcement issues, noise, number of trucks, registration of vehicles. All that's an issue that may come up in enforcement and having to enforce those issues. The ordinance amendment excludes other commercial vehicles. Another issue is noise with refrigerated trucks and noise in general. The maintenance of roads, compatibility with the Williamson Act, and costs associated with improvements may be too high for some of the truck operators. Some of the benefits that have been discussed include that trucks would have somewhere to park other than on the side of county roads. Having a place to park would provide security for these trucks and provide a use for smaller parcels where agriculture is not feasible. Large operations will still need to go through environmental review, while smaller operations will go through a simpler process. And the owner has to own a tractor-trailer combination. Therefore, the use will be limited only to truckers. The ordinance amendment was presented at the March 1st Planning Commission meeting. The commission discussed a number of items, including the number of truck-trailer combinations, the precedence in allowing a non-agricultural use, the availability of existing parking locations, the need for security and safety, concerns with ownership of vehicles and renting out spaces. Staff is proposing a slight modification to the ordinance amendment to keep the home occupation section consistent with the use permit criteria. The change will be included in Chapter 21.94, and those changes include Section J4, on-site maintenance shall be limited to oil and tire changes, light and windshield wiper replacement, and checking fluids. And J4 Part A, no offloading of trailer or parking of trailers, housing hazardous material shall occur on site. These modifications were made to keep the home occupation ordinance amendment consistent with the use permit criteria. The following are the Planning Commission's recommendation, which is to adopt both ordinance amendment sections, as well as staff's recommendation, which can be found in items 1 through 4 of the board report and include the modification of subsection J4 of Chapter 21.94 as outlined, again, as outlined in the board report. And staff is available for any questions that the board may have.
I have a number of questions. First of all, will you be allowed to do this truck parking on prime farmland?
Yes, the ordinance are applicable in any parcel within the A2 zone that meets size criteria.
Have we determined how many acres that this could project, could change? How many acres could be allowed countywide?
We have not done a calculation to see what the acreage would be.
Can you do this on Williamson Neck land?
There may be an opportunity to do it on Williamson Neck land. They would have to meet the principles of compatibility that are set out by the state, but if they can show that there's an area of the property that hasn't historically been farmed, that they're not taking anything out of agricultural production, there is some possibility that it could occur.
Why restriction of commercial vehicles? Commercial vehicles, DMV establishes them as a commercial vehicle. Why not a box truck? Why not a limo? Why not a taco truck? Why not a concrete pumping truck?
That is an excellent question. It is one that was discussed on several occasions with the different committees and by the ad hoc committee. The idea behind this that was driving the ordinance was to deal with the big rigs, the semi-trucks that were identified as 80,000 gross vehicle weight.
Have we studied the issue to find out what the availability of current places to rent a spot to park your truck?
Staff themselves have not. There has been testimony from those in the trucking community with respect to the lack of availability or cost as such, but it has not been looked at thoroughly.
It was an issue raised at the Planning Commission, so it was just the issue raised, and staff just goes by and, okay, issues raised, and just write them down. I mean, we didn't do anything after Planning Commission raised the issue?
We did not.
Okay. How does this not punch a hole in our zoning? By allowing a commercial business to go in, how does not that not set a precedence for other commercial operations?
It absolutely has the potential to set a precedence for opening up the agricultural area to other uses.
I think we missed a finding from your PowerPoint, because on item 3 is background condition. There's a find. The project is consistent with the overall goals and policies of the Stanislaus County General Plan. How does this policy consistent with the overall goals and policies of the general plan?
The agricultural designation of the general plan does allow for non-agricultural uses in the agricultural area, provided that they are found to be compatible and provided that they don't conflict with the primary use, which is agriculture. The agricultural designation does not strictly prohibit all non-agricultural uses. It does grant some latitude for uses that could be found to be compatible, and then that's a policy call that the board will have to make.
Okay. And if several parcels in a row opted to do truck parking, would you not now have as one of your findings, concentration of commercial areas?
That is something that would have to be looked at, yes.
Okay. And then I remember when we approved a gravel plant, we got road maintenance fees from a gravel plant. Will there be any road maintenance fees on these operations?
Each of the projects will have to go through an independent environmental review, and that is certainly something that will be looked at. In the past, the county's Public Works Department has seen that operations with large trucks, large vehicles, do need to pay a maintenance fee, and that is something that very well may be imposed on these.
Will you be allowed to do any offloading?
No, the ordinance restricts offloading.
Can you back up to your modification slide? Item J4E, no offloading of trailer or parking of trailers housing hazardous materials. I read that, I might read that differently than what it says, but to me it says that you can't offload trailers housing hazardous materials. Can we put a period in there after no offloading of trailers, period? No parking of trailers housing hazardous materials held for on-site?
Yes, we can.
Very good. Okay. Any other questions from other board members?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to go back to that Williamson Act. Although it would look fairly favorably on this ordinance there, I do not see any reason why it should be allowed in parcels that are in the Williamson Act. Mm-hmm. I want you to go over that again, if you would.
Yes. State regulations for Williamson Act require that in order to approve any use on Williamson Act property, you have to go through, there's three principles of compatibility that have to be met. And there is some small flexibility within that, but if you can show that you're not impacting the agricultural area, so if you had a parcel that, say, had a half-acre area that has not historically been used for agricultural area and maybe is set up because of an elevation issue or what be it that can't be irrigated, can't be used agriculturally, there may be an opportunity to say that it is compliant with the principles of compatibility and the truck parking could occur there. But they'll have to be looked at on an individual case by case. In general, it would be difficult to establish such an operation on a Williamson Act parcel, but it's not to say that it's impossible.
And who would make that determination?
That would be made by the decision-making body, which for a use permit would be the Planning Commission, unless the use permit were appealed to the board, and then it would be the board.
Okay.
Other questions?
No questions. I'll wait until comment.
I had one further question. Will ag mitigation be required on newly used parcels that are taken out of ag production?
There is no requirement through county policy to require ag mitigation. That is something to the environmental assessment for each of these uses. If they are taking land out of production, that could be considered.
Okay. No other questions from the board. Anybody in the audience wish to comment on this agenda item? Please come forward and state your name. You can just go one after another there. And we will need your name for the record.
Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm Richard Keyes from Turlock, 1443 Sevens Road. Most of you people know me, and maybe just a couple don't. But anyway, these parcels that we're talking about, that our group, that the people that I know, are all into small acreage, like 2 and 3 acres only. And most of it's never been irrigated or anything. And most of it, I think, is all gravelled. Everything's there. So they're not really taking any agricultural land away that can be irrigated or farmed. I farm 6 acres, and I do it. I don't make any money, can't even pay my taxes. I do it just to keep the place looking nice and the weeds down, basically. I mean, some of you guys know where I live, you know. And our group, all the places that I've been by, they're all nice and clean. There are no old trucks around, no junk, no anything. And so I would like you guys to take that consideration because these guys are owner-operators. They're proud of their company, proud of their rigs, and they do take good care of them. And can you imagine about these guys trying to move somewhere else? You know, they've paid big prices for this land to do this and live there all these years. Most of these guys, like, gee, one of my group here is there, been here for 40-something years. He should be grandfathered in. And most of them are 50% or 100% ag-related. We have one hay hauler here that's got one truck only. And actually, from my point of view, he shouldn't even be here. I mean, he's 100% and got one truck, you know. And we have another guy here that he hauls cans from the factory to the cannery. And that's all he hauls. So he's actually 100% farm-related. Comes down to it because all these truckers are intermingled with each other. You, Mr. O'Brien, how do you get your groceries to your store? By truck. And where do they get their fuel? They go to the fuel station. Well, like Mr. Gomes, he has a fuel station. A lot of truckers, hay haulers, everybody else, they go to his place and fill up. Or he goes to the farm and fills their tank, whatever the farmers need, you know. So it's all intermingled with each other, everything. So, I mean, and we got some that he hauls recycled glass to down south. He hauls fertilizer back to the farm supplies. So he's either 50% or 100% farm related, you know. So some of you guys have got trucks and understand what we're after, and some of you don't, you know. So we appreciate all the work you've done 2.5 years here, and we're hoping that we can make some headway on this thing because there's a lot of truckers looking at this, waiting to see what happens, you know. And it's going to affect quite a few thousand lives here, you know, of people, you know. And so that's all I got to say. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Mr. Keyes.
Thanks for working with us for 2.5 years so hard. I appreciate you too, Angela. I know you did your share.
I think we'll all be happy to solve this issue. Just one clarification on that. The ag trucks that are 100% ag are currently permitted and allowed.
There are provisions to allow them as ag service establishments with a use permit. There are also provisions currently under the home occupation for one single truck, regardless of whether it's agricultural or not.
And just for clarification, trucks that haul my groceries are not 80,000 pound trucks and would not qualify under this ordinance. That's just that clarification.
Actually, Ken, they only use an acre and a half of their use. Is that the minimum amount of land they can use on? Is it supposed to be 50% or? In other words, when they talk about the acreage where they have their home and put in their trucks, they're not able to use, isn't it limited to up to an acre and a half, and it's how many acres can they actually use?
The size of the acre, the property must be at least 1 acre in size. The maximum amount that they can use for the parking operation is 1.5 acres or 50% of the lot. So they have an acre.
So an acre or acre and a half is really the limitations on this per unit.
Right, for okay. Using it.
I know another gentleman wanted to speak. Good evening.
My name is Cleo Barth. I'm a resident in the rural area along the road in Houston area between the race and the service roads. My biggest concern is the breaking down of the roads on the small narrow roads that we have. The traffic, we have a neighbor who's in the business who is illegal at the time because he's moved in. He has probably 8 or 9 trucks there now. So he's been out of compliance for a number of years. He's going to be grandfathered in pretty quick. But you can't drive down the road with his set of doubles coming at you, and after you get off the road, there's not room. And that's a concern of mine. Now, if it is passed as a use permit, will the neighbors be notified of something going on?
Yes, neighbors will receive notice.
Will we have a voice in it?
You absolutely will have a voice in coming to the Planning Commission or to the board if it comes to the board.
The other thing that was mentioned, the property owner has to have a vehicle himself. So he can have 6 or 7 friends with a truck parking in compliance. So really you're getting into a commercial endeavor down the way. I see with trucking that should be more in an industrial area than in a farming community. I've lived on this road since 1951. I've seen the coming and going of a lot of vehicles, but the breaking down of our roads is the most important thing now because there's no money in the county to fix them, and the sides are all broken down. If I was a highway patrol phone, I'd probably get a ticket because I'd drive in the center of the road to keep from breaking down the edges. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments tonight? It'll bring it back to the board. And Mr. Keyes was absolutely correct that this we've been working on this for 2.5 years, and the group of trucking business owners we've worked with have been absolutely great at the process, and unfortunately sometimes we have great people doing business, and then we come and try to make a rule, and we got to understand that there's people in there who will abuse the rules that we put in place, and these were fine gentlemen of the trucking industry that worked with us for these 2.5 years. So I wanted to state that.
Okay.
Supervisor Montito.
Well, first of all, as already been stated, we've been working on this for 2.5 years, and again, I want to congratulate everyone that's been involved. This has evolved into what I consider a very outstanding program. There's no such program in the state of California. Everyone is trying to figure this out. So I'd like to get back to what we're trying to accomplish. First of all, is safety. And we're trying to keep these trucks off of residential areas or traffic where traffic is heavy. In fact, we've been asked and we've passed ordinances like in Orange Blossom Road, which is in the Oakdale area where you couldn't put trucks. We've been asked to pass ordinances on Crow's Landing Road, which we did, in order to get the trucks off of the main thoroughfares or in residential areas. But that also, by doing that, is, and they've always brought up the fact of safety as an element. Now, I understand that. And so I think this is not only and trying to find places where to park trucks is a safety issue. And if we do not find a place or a manner in which they can park their trucks, the small businessman, then we are going to continue to have these problems. I also think a third element in this is that we're talking about small truckers, not your major liners. And they do not have the money to go into industrial areas and pay the money that's required to have an acre or so in an industrial tract. Now, we have difficult economic times right now. And I believe for the services that they provide that we should do our utmost in helping the small businessman continue to be in business. We have some, in the agricultural area of defining what is an agricultural haul is a very interesting subject. If you haul cans to go to a cannery to can fruit or whatever, that's not an agricultural haul. So you don't qualify to park your car, or your car, not your car, but your truck in an agricultural area. Let's say that I handle some produce or some product someplace, and on the way back, I need a backload. And it happens to be bricks. Well, that disqualifies me. It also disqualifies me if I haul out of a certain area. Now, these are small businessmen trying to survive. They provide the services for many people in our community. And so I really believe that although we will never be able to come up with answering all the questions that are brought up, we've come up with a two-system parking arrangement, which has to go be permitted, has to go before the Planning Commission, and we've set up regulations. Now, are we going to satisfy everyone? No. But I do believe that we have a workable and a usable program. Sometimes when you try to cover all the bases, you destroy the effort you're trying to make. And if you make it too complicated, it's not going to be used. So consequently, we're right back where we were before, and more people in the community are going to come to us and ask for an ordinance to prevent trucks from parking in their streets. So I believe that we've addressed this very well. I'm very fond of this. I'm very supportive of this program. And that we will be able to, some of the issues we'll be able to address as we go on. But I believe this is very workable. And I do believe it will help small business people stay in business who provide a lot of service for our community.
Supervisor DeMartini?
Yeah. I was on the ad hoc committee with Supervisor Monteith, and this issue has drug on for a long time. It's been to the Ag Advisory Board a number of times, and we've really tried to see if we'd come up with something that would work. This ordinance was never intended to accommodate everybody and everything. It was done to try and accommodate existing operations of small truck owners that were primarily out in an ag area and had been there for years on some very small parcels. These parcels were never really economically viable as agricultural pieces, although they were out in an A2 zone. And I think this goes back to, you know, the policy of the county, which we don't have anymore, is allowing agricultural land to be broke up into such small parcels because they become unviable. And so small companies that went out there and started parking their trucks on. I think what we've got is something that's workable. It's it certainly doesn't accommodate everybody, but I think it takes care of a need in the community for small operations who park primarily their own trucks there, who live on the parcel. They have a few hoops to jump through. I mean, they can't offload. They can't repair their vehicles there. They can't have hazardous materials on there. I just think this is a reasonable thing to do. I'm very protective of agricultural land and to see that we don't have things out there that don't belong there. But in some of these small operations, I had a place in Houston, and I went by one of these truck facilities for years. Probably went by it 500 times, never even noticed it until it became an issue, and I went out there and looked at it. Well, they're not causing a problem out there. I think that they do fit. You know, in some circumstances, I think that we can come up with exceptions to keep these businesses going. As far as the home occupation part of it, that has been there for years and years. It was just one truck, and we've just raised that to three, and I think that's reasonable. You can have three trucks now instead of one without a use permit. You go over that, you need a use permit, and county has to look at it a little bit more closely. But there's been a lot of time on this, and this ordinance didn't come easily. There was a lot of input in it, a lot of meetings, 2.5 years worth of work on and off. And I think in the end, we've got something that's reasonable and can accommodate most businesses, but not all, but most. And I think that was the objective from the very beginning.
Supervisor Whitfield? I'm chairman. I get to go last.
Okay, there you go. You know, I'm all for kind of some of the concerns about agriculture and making sure that we don't take agriculture out of production. I don't think that's the case here. I think, you know, we're not going to lose large amounts of farmland as a result of this. And I think we're just dealing with things that are existing. I know you guys have been working on this for years, so I'm not going to go back and rehash, you know, what you guys have gone through here. But I think we're talking about existing businesses that are out there right now that are doing these things right now, and we're just bringing these things into compliance. I think if anything, it'll probably clean things up. This ordinance will end up cleaning up areas, if nothing else. As far as, back to what I thought about the farmland going out of production, farmland's going to be used for its highest and best use, and I can't imagine that we're going to have large amounts of farmland that would be used more profitable in trucking than they are in farming, especially right now. So, and I want to, I guess, kind of reiterate what Supervisor Montes says with regard to, we don't need to make things harder for existing businesses right now, especially in these times. We don't need to make things more expensive and make it harder for them to operate in profit. So a lot of work I know has gone into this over the last few years, and I'm just kind of coming in here at the tail end, but I'm in favor of this and I support this.
I had one more question of staff. The safety issue was raised. Do we have a accident rate calculated on trucks parked inside the road?
I can't answer that. Planning doesn't have access to those. I would imagine that there probably is some level of information, but I don't have access to it.
Okay. I am a pro-land right person, and I'm a pro-business person. That's why I find myself arguing against this is really strange. But what I see is that we're opening the door for a small segment of the business community. I spent more than 2.5 years working with wedding venue operators who were trying to do the same thing. They were operating in the county without the proper permits, small business owners. Some of them lost everything. Some great people, just like the truck operators, that never had complaints. Bloomingham Ranch was one of them. Great people. Had a great business out there. And we wouldn't let them do it because it was against farmland. So I'm just looking for equitable against all businesses. If we're going to allow big trucks, why not all commercial vehicles? If we're going to allow a concentration of commercial or industrial uses, it's one of the findings we have to make. But if several of these go in a row, we're going to absolutely come in conflict. I think I've said everything I needed to say. I won't reiterate and rehash this out. But I'm just looking for consistency, and I don't think we have it. We're going to allow this to go on prime farmland without ag mitigation on Williamson Act lands. I just don't quite understand it. So.
Comment, please.
Supervisor Montes.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, but I'd like to draw a comparison. in all fairness, I think we're talking about apples and oranges. You know, I know the discussions we had in the marriage areas of performing marriages out in the country, and we voted against that. But I think there is a difference. You can get married in the church, get married in a park, you can get married every Friday right down here. But so there are various options. You can get married in your field if you're not going to have a huge party and reception. But where can we park small trucks with truck owners that have maybe two or three trucks? It's a matter of being able to be in business or not be in business, okay? You can still get married without that approval, which we turned down. But small truck men are fighting to stay in business, and so I think we're talking about two different issues. Now, we may differ on that, and that's fine.
We will, because...
But I think there's... We're talking about apples and oranges. And thank you for letting me...
And you can park your truck in a truck parking lot that exists today that we didn't study. County Council, I believe you have some clarifications you want to make before there's a motion.
Two things, and maybe it's a question of staff. My understanding is that under state law, there may be some restrictions on what types of hazardous materials may or may not be stored on property, whether it's under a use permit or whether it's a home occupation. Currently, the ordinance for use permits does not discuss hazardous materials, but that would be addressed in the use permit process, whether it would be allowed, not allowed, or under what conditions it would be allowed.
Correct.
The home occupation does not require the use permit, and therefore lacks the opportunity to condition it as such, and so therefore we're just simply saying not allowed under that. So the when it gets time for a recommendation for a motion, I can make that if there is a motion to proceed with adopting those based upon that. We can either do it as one full motion, or if you want to take a separate vote on making the amendment, we can do that.
Pleasure of this board.
Well, we're going to have to be under their regulations anyway, aren't we? Others, we're making it available, but the state may have regulations as to what hazardous material may be, and we don't make that decision, do we? So we fit within the law.
For example, I might say that certain fertilizers may be considered hazardous materials. They may be appropriate in the agricultural areas to keep them on the premises for a limited period of time or under certain conditions. Other hazardous materials, possibly fuel or something, may have different restrictions. So I think it depends on the types of materials you're talking about.
I'm missing something, but I believe that's controlled by the law. We don't make that determination. Whatever that is, then that goes into the requirement. I don't see a problem with that personally.
As part of the use permit requirement, it would be referred out to both the county's hazardous materials division and to other state regulatory agencies that would have oversight with the hazardous materials. So there's an opportunity to identify whether or not the trucks will be carrying hazardous materials and to condition them appropriately so that they either do or they don't. We have controls over those hazardous materials. We added specific language where staff is asking for a modification to the home occupation because there was no language in there that would have restricted hazardous materials. And since it is not, it's essentially a ministerial permit, we wanted to make sure that there was a mechanism where we could restrict hazardous materials. They could still come in and apply. They would just have to apply to the use permit process so that we could go through that review.
Mr. Dorning, what would be your recommendation for this Board of Supervisors?
Assuming that the board chose to proceed with adoption of this ordinance with that amendment, then the appropriate motion would be to adopt four staff recommendations and to amend subsection J4E of subsection 21.94.030 to read as follows, quote, no offloading of any trailer, comma, and no parking of any trailer housing hazardous materials, comma, shall occur on site,
Close quote.
Is there a motion to that effect?
I'll make a motion for that, to what Jack just read.
Motion by Withrow. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Monteith. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. No. Passes 3-1. All right. Moving on to correspondence.
This board has received a copy of the report, Public Safety Realignment, California at Crossroads, from the American Civil Liberties Union.
Refer to the Sheriff, District Attorney, Chief Probation Officer, and the Public Defender.
This board has received a letter from the Don Food Products, Inc. regarding permanent closure of their operations at 2407 and 2455 Tenaya Drive and 737 Riverside Drive in Modesto, California, that was to begin during a two-week period near March 10, 2012, but has been extended for some employees until the second-week period beginning on April 27, 2012.
Refer to Alliance WorkNet and the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a public notice from the California High Speed Rail Authority regarding the notice of availability and notice of consideration of the partially revised final program environmental impact report for the Bay Area to Central Valley High Speed Train.
Refer to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received from the California Fish and Game Commission a notice of receipt of petition for the listing of the gray wolf as an endangered species.
Refer to Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received from the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District a public meeting notice regarding the draft guidance for assessing and mitigating air quality impacts for 2012.
Refer to the Department of Environmental Resources.
And this board has received a letter from the Department of Veterans Affairs regarding the cash benefits received in Stanislaus County.
Refer to the Department of Aging and Veteran Services.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports?
I hope everyone has filed their tax returns.
There's our CPA.
There you go.
Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Not this evening, Chair.
This meeting is adjourned.